I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about one of the most controversial subjects in education, school vouchers. Proponents of vouchers say they will empower parents and improve student performance by increasing accountability. Opponents of vouchers say that they will create a two-tiered system of education and take needed resources away from public schools that already are underfunded. Our guests for this lively discussion will be Robert Enlow of the Friedman Foundation, Mark Giaquena of the Fort Wayne Community School Board, and voucher parent Karenia Chrysler. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about school vouchers. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Got a great group of guests today, starting with Robert Enlow of the Friedman Foundation. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And also with me here in the studio is Karenia Chrysler, who is a voucher parent. Karenia, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. And joining us by phone from Fort Wayne, I presume, is Mark Giaquena, who is a Fort Wayne Community School Board member. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. First, probably, we ought to talk a little bit. I know for those of us who live in this world, it's impossible to believe that there might be people out there who don't know what a school voucher is. But we probably ought to explain what it is. I'll let Robert take the first crack at that.
Thank you. So a school voucher is very simple. You can call it whatever you want, but it's basically saying the state of Indiana collects tax money for the education of children. And in most cases, it goes to traditional schools directly from the state. In the case of a voucher, it goes through a parent to a non-public school or public school or charter school of their choice, right? So it basically gives parents the power to control the money, a certain amount of that money. And in the case of Indiana, it's less than the actual amount of money that would be given to their child if they would have gone to a traditional school. So what we've done, a voucher is very simple. It's basically saying your child should be able to get X amount of dollars. Let's say in this case in Indiana, the average voucher is $4,091. And you can go to any school that accepts it, public or private, in this case private mostly. So it's basically putting the parent in between the sort of tax collecting purpose of the state and then the tax delivering purpose of the state to schools, giving parents a lot of power.
And Mark, you are an opponent of vouchers. What is the objection to a voucher system?
Well, the objection to a voucher system for education is that it takes one public service and essentially siphons money off of the public schools, which need those funds. I mean, we're still one of very few states that don't provide pre-K education, where all the experts say would make the biggest difference in education performance for children. It takes that money out of the public school system and will ultimately yield the exact kind of system the proponents of education reform say they don't want. It would be no different than to provide a voucher to me for having chosen a private golf course. I choose to play not at a public course, so give me the money that my tax dollars would ordinarily go to support that public course, and I'll use it to play golf at a private course. Now, of course, the more of us who do that, the more dilapidated the public course will become to the point where it's no longer playable. Why we've selected education to do that, a service that desperately needs that funding, I have no idea. I can tell you it is not a performance issue. It is a religious choice issue.
Karenia, as a voucher parent, I want to bring in perhaps, before, and I have a sneaking suspicion that we can spend a lot of time talking about the ideology involved here. I'd like to at least get some of the, you know, the practical concerns here. What have vouchers, how has a voucher system made a difference in terms of your education? And it's your son, right, that, that is using it. Tell me a little bit about your story. How did you end up deciding that you wanted to use a voucher and not go to the public schools?
Well, my son was originally attending a private school that changed to a charter school, and he attended that charter school for 1 year. At that time, I was looking into other options. I looked into the public schools that surrounded my home and were within a comparable distance, and they're failing. And so, someone.
You don't have to give away your neighborhood, but in what school district do you live?
It was IPS.
Okay, Indianapolis Public Schools.
Yes. And so someone told me about the voucher program. I was confident that I didn't qualify because I never qualify for anything. But I looked into it anyway, and I did qualify. And so I was able to send him to the school that is a very high-performing school. He's doing well, and I'm pleased, and he's pleased.
And let me just say that from the same practical standpoint, this is Mark.
Yes.
Fort Wayne Community Schools is a high-performing school district. We have an 88.5% graduation rate. We're extremely proud of our schools. And we have lost $1.3 million in funding from students who have left A-rated schools. Now, those are schools rated A by the state of Indiana. So to suggest that this old myth that vouchers go to help students escape failing schools just doesn't hold water for us. And yet we have an extremely high percentage of the vouchers. Why? Because we have a very high number of parochial schools in our city. I mean, so what is very hurtful for us is to suggest that this is anything more than religious choice. As a matter of fact, and I'm very pleased for her that she has found an educational institution that is suitable to her. But in Fort Wayne, charter schools were closed because they were failing. And do you know what they did? They changed into Christian voucher schools, so you can now get a voucher and leave an A-rated public school to attend an F-rated Christian school.
So this is Robert, hearing from Mark a couple things about that. One, I appreciate all the work that all of us do to try and improve education in public schools and private schools and charter schools. This is hard work, right? Let's be very clear to reform our system. But we've got to be very clear that this is about parents having options. It's not necessarily and only about failing schools. You look at Fort Wayne Community Schools, you can say that it's an 88.5% graduation rate, but they have a 20% DNF rate, whereas the voucher schools in Fort Wayne have a 0% DNF rate. So really, we can make the arguments about statistics and numbers of schools. The real goal is to actually, we know that when a parent gets the freedom to choose, they're going to actually get more involved in their child's education. They're going to be more satisfied. They're going to get more involved in their homework. And it's going to be a better situation all around. And in fact, one of the best stories I saw coming out of Fort Wayne recently was because of all the competition from the voucher, Fort Wayne Community Schools are out knocking on doors. Probably the first, second time they've ever done that, right? And that's great because you have a customer base that you're trying to get because you have a quality school you want to show. The other thing I want to point out is siphoning dollars, right? So this concept of siphoning dollars, it is proven in the state of Indiana. In fact, the DOE, the Indiana Department of Education, released a couple weeks ago that they redistributed $4.9 million back into the public school system from the voucher program.
That's because we're spending less, right?
So,
okay, just a minute, Mark. Well,
why that number is so laughable. Those dollars were not redistributed to the districts with a high percentage of religious schools in them who lost students from A-rated schools to those religious schools. They were redistributed on a pro rata basis, not based on how many students the district lost to vouchers. So while we lost $1.3 million from an A-rated school, we received back about $100,000. I mean, and that's just the beginning of the argument.
So isn't that, to be clear, so the people...
that only parents of students who are high-performing get the choice. Woe to those whose kids have disabilities. That's why the Department of Justice just sent out a scathing letter to the Department of Education in Wisconsin, and it will happen here in Indiana as well, advising them that they have got to stop discriminating against those who would use a voucher but whose children unfortunately have a malady that will prevent them from participating fully in those curricula.
So as a child,
just a moment here, as well, because they're discriminating. We get questions: how well were their, what was their I-STEP score? What are their grades? Do they have a disability? And you know what? There is absolutely no requirement that they disclose why they refuse a student.
Okay,
this
cream
skimming. And that's all this is, and
Mark,
it's cream skimming for religious purposes.
Mark, I'm going to make sure everybody gets a chance to talk here, and I guess since both of us, I understand the passions are high on this issue, and I would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Okay, so you know what? As I understand it, Mark, your argument here too is that $1.3 million flowed out of the system, $100,000 came back, basically. So you had a $1.2 million loss, right?
Well, it's not just that. I mean, look at Cornerstone Christian in Fort Wayne. It's an F-rated school. They received 125 vouchers, about $500,000. Well, guess what? Cornerstone Christian Church now has a brand new $500,000 building where they attend church on Sundays and teach school during the week. I mean, if we ever ran Fort Wayne Community Schools like that, I would no longer be on the board. But the taxpayers have no right to attend their board meetings. The State Board of Accounts doesn't look at their books. They're receiving millions and millions of dollars statewide for religious education. 98% of these vouchers go to Christian, Muslim, Jewish schools. And there is very little, if any, financial oversight. And you don't, as a taxpayer, have the right to ask them how they're spending your money. Nor do they have to keep records of who they reject. So when we talk about choice, it's choice of religion for those whose kids are, first of all, their parents do make the choice, so their parents are involved. If we're going to compare statistics on educational performance, they're starting with children whose parents are involved. And after they get the voucher, it extends to siblings whose parents have already made the choice. They're already in the school, so they're not making a choice, really. That choice is already made, and then they get a voucher. Ultimately, the taxpayers of this state have to decide this. Are we ready to fund about 90,000 more parochial students to the tune of $450 million with no financial oversight?
Okay, let me let
Mark, hold on.
Let me just, Robert.
So a couple things here that we need to talk about since this show is built off of reasoned discussion. One, I didn't know you knew more than the Indiana Supreme Court, who actually says that this is not aid to religious schools, it's aid to parents. So unless you actually have a degree that the Indiana Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court says, this is actually aid to families.
Degree.
Now, hold on, second of all.
No.
Second of all, Mark, hold on, please.
Let Robert
second of all,
speak.
The families who are using this are vastly low income. 80% of the families are free and reduced price lunch qualified. It's families who are in need who want these programs. Third of all, the great thing about the voucher system in Indiana is that if you're failing to perform, you're going to not be able to get the money necessary to continue after 2 years because they start saying you can't get the money continually. That doesn't happen in our traditional school system. We'll keep in 7, 8, 9 years when they're failing. The 20% that are in Fort Wayne, all that are their DRF. You know, this fact is, the fact is, that's the,
Fort Wayne.
That is the grading system from the state of Indiana. You can dispute that with Glenda, not me. The other thing is if we think that the money being spent in Indiana in education, barring the decrease in, I think it was 2008-09, we know that in America and in Indiana the same, money being spent on public schooling in America has gone up fourfold over inflation. So either we're saying we're unable to do it with the money we have, or we're saying these kids are just too difficult for us to educate. And I know Karini will say that's not true. Fact is we are trying to make sure that all kids get a quality education, both public, private, and charter.
We are talking.
If we were really trying to do that, we would fund public education the way the rest of the country funds it. We would get children into our schools at a point where windows are opening and closing in their brains. Vocabulary makes a huge difference.
And so then we would have a two-tiered system that we have now.
And that is what we're not doing.
Okay.
What I would say to Corinna, and this is really critical.
Just a second, Mark. We're going to have to go into a break, but thank you very much. We are talking about school vouchers here on No Limits, and as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about school vouchers here on No Limits. My guests are Robert Enlow of the Friedman Foundation, Mark Giaquenta, who is a Fort Wayne Community School Board member, and Karenia Chrysler, who is a voucher parent. We're obviously having a very lively discussion here, and I want to make sure as we continue the discussion that everybody has a chance to be heard. So I guess I'm going to set some ground rules going forward here. One person talks at a time, and it'll be, well, since we're all in the education business, we're going to pretend I'm the teacher. I decide who talks at what time, and when I ask people to let someone else speak, I will expect that to be respected. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit. We've both made reference. This issue has been put before the Supreme Court. And, Robert, I'm going to let you have the first crack at explaining what the Indiana Supreme Court decided. And then, Mark, I will let you respond.
The Indiana Supreme Court, in its decision, said that the voucher program in Indiana, by the way, a 5-0 ruling, so unanimous ruling, which rarely happens nowadays, building off of the Zelman case from the United States Supreme Court, said that the voucher program in Indiana can be seen in no way to advance religion. In fact, what it does is it's aid to families that allows them to choose a school in a truly neutral and private way. It's open to all families to go to any school that meet a certain criteria, in this case, income, among any school that participates and agrees to participate. And if they agree to participate, they follow certain rules of oversight, of accountability, and of things like that. So the Indiana Supreme Court, in its Meredith v. Pence decision, ultimately it was Meredith v. Daniels, said that voucher program is wholly and unequivocally constitutional in the state of Indiana because it's aid to children to go to schools that work best for them.
And Mark, I'm going to give you a chance to respond now.
Well, thanks. To answer Mr. Enlow, yes, I am a lawyer, so I am trained in reading opinions. And I understand how the Constitution is interpreted. I've read the Constitutional Convention of 1850 more than once, cover to cover. So I do get this a little bit more than perhaps you as a non-lawyer. I will tell you this. There are two ways to determine the constitutionality of any law. One is on its face. The other is as applied. This was a determination that the statute was constitutional on its face. It was brought immediately after the passage of the act and before any data was collected and analyzed to determine whether or not the statute is constitutional as applied. That lawsuit will likely come at some point once it is determined that almost 98% of the schools that receive vouchers are Christian schools. I mean, are Christian, Muslim, or Jewish schools. That lawsuit has yet to be brought. So, Mr. Enlow, I appreciate your passion on this issue as a non-lawyer. Those of us who understand how constitutional decisions are rendered would see it a little differently. I also think, though, we're missing the bigger point when Corinna talks about failing schools and when Mr. Enlow mistakenly claims that 20% of Fort Wayne community schools are failing. There is absolutely no data that would indicate that voucher schools do any better with the individual students than the public schools. We put this moniker on a school without any reference to the challenges presented to those teaching staffs. I have stopped as board president in Fort Wayne. I actually cringe every time we honor our four-star schools. Why? Because we have a couple schools, only a couple, that have a demographic that is higher middle income with two-parent families, and guess what? They pass ISTEP at an almost 100% rate. They should. The people who should be honored are those teachers who are teaching students whose parents maybe lived in a Burmese refugee camp last year, who don't speak English to this day, but whose children are attending one of our inner city schools. And those are the teachers who bring out the best in these students. Now, are their test scores the same as Kroninger or Irwin, who are four-star schools? No, but we're seeing growth that is absolutely amazing. So if you want to call those schools failing, you go ahead and do it. I call them miracle workers.
Karenya, I want to bring you into this conversation. Was you know, the decision to use the voucher, I mean, it was part of your motivation to put your child in a religious environment while he was learning?
It was a consideration. I wanted him to be in a school that was going to challenge him and was going to work best for him. And as a taxpayer, I also pay taxes also. And so I don't want to have to pay taxes for a public school and then pay to send my son to a private school if that's my choice. I think that the money that he receives through the voucher should go where he goes to school.
And
because
that is,
I also am a taxpayer.
And that's an interesting argument. We're talking about school vouchers here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. That's an interesting argument, because I saw, as someone, and I probably ought to do a disclosure here, as a former executive director of what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, my record, I have had concerns about vouchers for a long time and have expressed them. For the purposes of this conversation, I'm just going to try to make sure that everybody gets heard and that the questions get posed. But I thought there was a really interesting exchange in this past session of the Indiana General Assembly when, at one point, Luke Kenley, senator from Noblesville, was, and I am having a brain fade, the House Education Chair.
Bob Boehning.
Yes, Bob Boehning was testifying before Senate committee, and Luke Kenley was trying to move this discussion or debate beyond sort of where we are right now, whether it's constitutional or not. And at least for the moment, I think we can all agree that the Supreme Court in Indiana has said that it is. But Kenley
on
was
its
starting
face.
On its face, yeah, and I'll take the stipulation on that. But what Kenley was saying is, in effect, okay, now we need to measure how effective these things are. And Boehning actually, to some degree, was making the same argument that I hear Karenya making, that as a parent, it should be a parent's right, and effectiveness isn't necessarily a consideration. Kenley was making an argument somewhere between what I see as Robert Enloe's and Mark Giaquinta's here, and saying, in effect, well, yeah, just because it might be legal on its face, if you want to stipulate, Mark, that doesn't necessarily mean it's good public policy. Our investment in education is to achieve an outcome. Mark, how effective have vouchers been?
Well, and that's the whole point. The talking point changed. 2 years ago, it was all about the effectiveness of parochial schools over public schools. And then guess what happened? ISTEP test scores came out. And lo and behold, and the same argument was made with regard to charters. We don't have enough data yet with vouchers because they're not teaching the kinds of kids that present the challenges who attend public schools. But in the charter school arena, and I think I can use this as an example because they're now transforming themselves into a voucher school at Imagine, the neighborhood public school 5th grade English language arts had a 73% pass rate. Imagine 5th grade girls had a 36% pass rate. They failed. They're now a voucher school. And the talking point, therefore, had to change. So what did they do? they went with the Enlo talking point. Well, it's all about choice. And what I would say to Corinne, and she sounds like a very nice lady, and I'd love to meet her sometime.
She is. She is a nice lady.
You know, Corinne, if you want to spend your tax dollars at this school, well, that's fine. A couple points. I personally, they're my tax dollars too, because education is no longer funded under property tax. So everybody in the state is paying for the Muslim school students to attend the Islamic schools, the Jewish students to attend the Jewish schools, and the Christian students to attend the Christian schools. And I don't want my tax dollars used for that purpose. And secondly, if they're going to be used for that purpose, I should be able to attend the board meetings. I should be able to talk about what the budget looks like. I should be able to decide what kind of trips they take and how the money is spent and whether or not they should be at a Fort Wayne Tin Caps game during a school day. I don't get to say any of that, even though my tax dollars are being used to fund those schools. On the other hand, boy, oh boy, do we hear from taxpayers about those very same issues with regard to public schools. And so the accountability is missing from the financial side. It's missing from the special ed needs of these students. And I'm telling you, when you read this DOJ letter to Wisconsin schools, that shoe is going to drop here in Indiana, and it's also going to be missing from the acceptance level. No one will ever know who they reject, why they rejected them, and who they expel and why they expel them. So it's only choice for a select few, and that's not real choice at all.
Okay, I'm going to give Robert a chance to respond, and then I'm going to try. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join the conversation.
So I
want to
appreciate all of Mark's points. I will say the following. Let's take a look at performance, and we will continue to talk about performance. And these are numbers from the state of Indiana. 2012 IREAD, 84.5% of our public schools in the state, great public schools, passed IREAD third graders. Non-public schools, 94.1%, and voucher schools, 93.6%. Those numbers have increased. If you want to look at ISTEP scores in terms of the last ISTEP results, our traditional public schools are doing a really good job. Again, a lot of them are doing a really good job. 79% passed English language arts and 81% passed math. But 91% of our voucher schools had kids passing math, and 89% of our kids passing math in the voucher schools. If you look at the overall A to F rates, and again, I agree with Mark on one very important point. This should not be about failure, right? This should be about both parental choice and outcomes-based reform. So when the great thing about the voucher program is that when a child and when a school is failing to perform over a period of time, they lose the ability to bring in new students, and they have real outcome-based consequences. It's not the same type of consequences that we have. We talk about oversight. Well, the DOE does have oversight, both of the financial use of the money and of the test scores, and they do audits. There is a significant amount of resources. We also know, and I think really importantly, I think your listeners need to know who's using scholarships, right? 80% of them are prior year public school students. 66% come from metropolitan areas, but 18 from suburban and 16 from metropolitan. 81% are free and reduced price lunch kids. Indiana's public schools are 79% white, 11% African American, and 7% Hispanic. Indiana's voucher users are 51% white, 20% African American, and 19% Hispanic. So when we're talking about who's using it and the performance, right now we have these numbers and we're happy to compare them. We don't want failure of any kind, public, private, or charter, and we need to make sure that we are rigorous on outcomes. So I encourage Mark and us to continue having that debate.
We are talking about school vouchers here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Marie, welcome to the program.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening to the conversation, and my husband and I continually have a conversation about this. And my question is, what is the amount of about voucher that a parent receives for their child, and does it or can it exceed the amount that that parent pays in property taxes? Because if it is, then that means all taxpayers are paying for vouchers for religious schools, which my husband and I do not support.
So, John, can I take the first crack at that?
I'll tell you what. I let you have the first crack last time. Let me let Robert have it, and then, Mark, I will give you a chance to respond. Thank you very much for the call, Marie.
So, great question. Appreciate the question. First of all, no property taxes in the state of Indiana goes to a private voucher school or a private school. Those are now, with the change in the law, property taxes used for facilities, debt refinancing, and transportation, none of which really goes to the non-public voucher schools. The money collected for vouchers is at the state general fund level, of which a school can only receive 90%. A maximum school can get, a non-public voucher school, is 90% of what the state would have spent on their child. And if you're above a free and reduced price lunch, then you only get 50%. As you know, the average voucher that I mentioned is $4,091. We know that the average amount for our traditional schools is higher. So the non-publics are not getting any property tax, they're not getting any federal money from the voucher program, and they're only getting a portion of the state money.
And Mark, I'm going to give you a shot too.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I mean, that's the whole point. Property taxes are no longer funding public education. And so you're paying for the voucher students in Fort Wayne to attend religious institutions. They get $4,800. It's just gone up. It started at $4,500, went to $4,700. Now it's gone up again to $4,800. And I mean, I would argue, I mean, I think your point is well taken. If you are offended by having to fund religious education over which you have no control, then you really need to be heard on this. And the thing about it is, the worst part is, and it's amazing to me, you started the show, John, by saying that, oh, everybody understands vouchers. I'm finding they don't understand vouchers. This can't be reduced to a soundbite. The fact of the matter is, there is no separate pool of money to pay for vouchers. It's one common educational pool. So every time $4,800 goes to a voucher student, it leaves the public school system. And here's what that means for us. We don't know on the first day of school how many children won't attend who will be receiving vouchers. So we have fully staffed the school without knowing what we will lose. If we lose 100 students, that's $500,000 approximately. And yet they're spread over 52 different schools, countless grades within the, well, it is count, you can count them, but I mean, all the different grades, we don't, it's not even a ripple on the pond in terms of our having to fund operations, and yet it's $500,000 gone from our budget. So I'm not here becoming passionate over an academic point. I'm becoming passionate because we're reducing the quality of instruction millions of dollars at a time without being able to change any real operation because the number of students is spread over such a broad base.
I'm going to keep moving through the listeners because clearly there's a lot of listener interest here. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Sarah, and if you want to send us a tweet, you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Sarah says, I'm curious about accountability. What state regs do voucher schools follow? I-step scores, letter grades. Mark, I'm going to let you have the first crack at that one. I'm going to ask you to keep it to about 45 seconds.
The real problem is that voucher students can be expelled or refused. And so when we compare a voucher school, we're not comparing voucher students, and that's critical. So the accountability is sorely missing. Their board meetings are not subject to the open door law. Their records are not subject to the open door records. FERPA is the statute that protects student data. We don't know who they expel, why they expel them, who they take them, why they don't take them, and we don't have any control over their money. They are not subject to State Board of Account audits.
We are talking, I'm going to give you real quick about 15 seconds, Robert. And then
yeah, that of course isn't true. I mean, they have audit functions. State Board can look at it. The schools have to be accredited. Non-public schools have to be accredited. They have to take I-step. They have to follow the letter grades. Expulsions, we know that traditional schools expel kids at a far higher rate. We know that they're getting less dollars. And so we know that there is actual oversight and accountability, and they take an I-step.
We are talking about school vouchers here on No Limits. My guests are Robert Enloe of the Freedom Friedman Foundation, Mark Giaquena, who's a Fort Wayne Community School Board member, and Karenia Chrysler, who is a voucher parent. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are having a very lively conversation today about school vouchers. And as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. As I said, we are talking about school vouchers. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Lori, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind, Lori?
Oh, sorry. I walked away and I lost you there. My name is Lori. I am a teacher. I've been teaching for 7 years in a public school system in Indianapolis. And I'm an art school teacher. One of the things I've been hearing or haven't heard is parental and student involvement in their own personal education. And a lot of these parents are involved that do send their kids with the vouchers, and that's a good thing. But the other problem is, what about the parents that are not involved, and what about the students that are not involved?
Thank you very much for the call and the question, Lori. Well, I'm going to start in part because you've been the silent voice in this discussion so far, Karenia. You know, how important, you know, how high a value do you place on being involved in your son's education?
I'm very involved in his education. At the beginning of every school year, no matter where he has attended, I meet with the teachers. I tell them, this is my contact information. I am a phone call away. Here's my work number. Here's my cell number. Here's my home phone number. My son knows what I expect from him. He knows that that certain things are not acceptable. The school knows that I support them 100%, and I don't have problems like that. The school that he came from did have a lack of parental involvement, and it showed. It showed in the way that the children behaved in the school, the challenges that the school met. And honestly, you know, to speak to Mark, I think that if he had a choice and his child, I don't think that he would send his child to a school that was underperforming. I think that if he had a choice also to send his child to an underperforming school or to send his child to a school that was doing better, he would do like any other responsible parent and choose the school that was performing better.
Mark, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to respond, and then I really want to get as many of the listener comments as possible.
But the first thing I would do is ask, how do you define underperforming? I would be very careful about that term. Does it mean how a school performs with the same student at two different schools? Because that data is not tracked. So unfortunately, when we tell people that it's an F-rated school, we don't tell them that the teachers in that school are actually better teachers getting more out of the student than their counterparts at an A-rated school. So I would be very careful about the definition. I would also want to go back to one point. I hope your listeners will call the State Board of Accounts and ask them if they perform regular audits on parochial schools who get vouchers. The answer will be no.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Alex who says, the parent featured on the show wants her tax dollars to go where her kid goes to school. Okay, but what about those of us with no kids? Why don't we have any say? Why should this parent get to decide how to spend my tax dollars? The public school needs lots of improvement for sure, but at least with public schools, we can vote for the school board. Robert, I'm going to let you respond to that one.
Great question. You know, with the voucher program, you certainly have a say in terms of your state elected representative. We spend a lot of dollars, taxpayer dollars, on a lot of programs that people don't benefit from that don't have kids. Take a look at Pell Grants, for example. Pell Grants are a federal program that we pay tax dollars for that go to religious schools all the time. Look at the GI Bill the GI Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, the GI Bill. Hundreds of thousands of families use that and returning servicemen and went to religious schools. So, look, I think the way that you have a voice in this is join the school board of the school that you're in your neighborhood that's been a community private school forever. Talk to your elected representative. And I would then want to also agree with Mark on a couple other things. Well, I think we need to be very careful about what we term underperforming. I think we need to have a whole bunch of metrics like safety, like budget variance, like parent retention and parent satisfaction, student satisfaction and teacher satisfaction. I think looking at a whole school culture is a really important thing.
We've gotten an email question from a regular listener by the name of Jerry who says, I would like to hear the response of each of your guests to both of the following questions. Does the government have a responsibility to provide educational opportunity to all citizens? And then two, does the government have a responsibility to make sure that government money is not used to promote a religious establishment? Mark, I'll let you have the first crack at that one, but try to keep it to 30 to 45 seconds.
Yeah, I'll try. I mean, first of all, I don't believe under either the U.S. or the state constitution, and again, we have a very specific provision in our state constitution that states that religious institutions shall not be the recipients of funds that come from the state treasury. Unfortunately, what has been done is the proponents of vouchers have come up with mechanisms to do this through what are called scholarship granting organizations and other legal fictions that ultimately do force you to fund religious education. I don't think that should occur. Yes, the government certainly has a responsibility to provide for a well-educated citizenry, and the way to do that is to join the other states across the country and get our students into schools as quickly as we can. In Fort Wayne, Carinya, we understand that we have a number of students and parents who are not involved with their parents' education. We know that. We know who we are, and we don't make it an excuse. That's who we are. If you want to teach at Fort Wayne Community Schools, you're just going to have more challenges facing you, but our staff is up to it, and we try to fill those gaps, and that's why we perform at the level we do.
Robert, I'll let you have the next.
I think the government has an absolute responsibility to provide the funds to have educational opportunity. Whether those funds are provided in a traditional school system, charter school system, or a private school system, because it's all through the individual choice of parents. So the government has a responsibility to fund education. It doesn't necessarily have to have a lockstep on owning and operating education, which was what we've created in this country. And in terms of the funding religion, well, I'd like to say that, again, our current Supreme Court ruling is that it's not funding religion. It's aid to individuals who are going to any school that works best for them on its face. So, look, I think the government has a responsibility to ensure that children receive a quality education. And our Constitution has this great thing in it. It says it shall be the duty of the General Assembly to encourage by all means the education for our children. Then it does this great thing. It says semicolon and to provide for a system of common schools. As I know Mark knows, our system of common schools in Indiana used to be reading the Bible all the time. And used to fund private schools and sectarian institutions for years, even after the 1850 Assembly. So, look, I think it's responsibility of our government to fund schooling, not necessarily one type of school.
Corinne, do you want to take a stab at this, too?
I actually happen to agree. I think that the government should, it does have a responsibility to educate. However, I think that it is also the government's responsibility to support the parents in the decisions that they make. And as far as what is best for their children. And I don't need the government or anybody else to tell me that it is best for me to send my child to a public school if I don't feel that's best for him. I'm his parent. I know what's best for him, and I make those decisions.
We are talking about school vouchers here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. Just two quick comments, and that is I spend a lot of time in rural Georgia, and Georgia has been a state that has really bought into the idea of the voucher system. And the last time I was down was at the end of football season, and our local paper had a picture of the public school and the private school. The interesting thing was that the public school was the football team was entirely African American, and the private school was lily white. And you guys have been talking about the Constitution, and I would just say to you that diversity was something that was not championed in our original Constitution. Black people were counted as 3/5 of a human being. Women were not allowed to vote. And I think that my problem with private schools is that we don't share anything. We don't grow. We don't have any diversity when we separate people. And that's what my great fear is, that we will continue to have private schools that grow more and more white and public schools that grow more and more African-American, Hispanic, and we miss out on that diversity. And I think that public schools are meant for one thing, and that is that we sink or swim together. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Bill. Karenya.
I'd like to respond to that. I would say that my son, the school that he attended prior to becoming a voucher recipient was 100% African-American. The school that he attends now is, I think, 40% African-American, and I could be wrong, I don't know, but it's far more diverse. There's African-American, there's Caucasian, there's Asian, there's Hispanic. I mean, there is so much more diverse, and my concern when he was at the other school was the fact that there was no diversity. And so him being a voucher recipient has actually increased the diversity as opposed to...
Is there a mechanism in the law to get to Bill's point, though, that says that, you know, if you've got a voucher, a school can't refuse you based on racial, ethnic...
Yeah, so the law says that a school may apply its own admissions criteria but may not discriminate on the basis of race, color, creed, and that kind of thing. The great news for Bill is that... here's the bad news and the good news, diversity-wise. You know how the traditional school systems have created a lack of diversity is because it's a zip code, right? Because we assign kids by zip code, a lot of the schools, and if you look at the Harvard Civil Rights Project, they'll say that our schooling in America is more segregated than ever before. The great news about the data in Indiana and other places are that the kids who are receiving the vouchers are almost twice as likely to be African American as the normal public school system. They're almost three times as likely to be Hispanic. So we are increasing the diversity in our traditional private school system. And the even better news is the data on this is they've done studies of integration and segregation in public and private schools. And guess what ends up being more integrated? It tends to be the private schools according to the data you see.
We've gotten an email question from a listener who goes by the initials JM. I understand the argument that the money should follow the child and go to a private school if a family would choose that for their child. However, private voucher schools do not have to follow the same rules and regulations that public schools have to follow. For example, they do not have to accept every child that comes to their door. As a taxpayer, I think the true equality in our education system statewide would mean that all schools that accept public money must follow exactly the same rules, regulations. By creating a different set of rules, regulations, we are setting up public schools to fail. Why would expecting all schools taking public money to follow the same rules, regulations be unreasonable? Mark, I'm going to let you have the first crack at that one.
Well, I mean, that, and I would urge everyone, if they can, if they're interested in this topic, get your hands on the letter from the Department of Justice to the state superintendent of the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. They found that they did, in fact, discriminate against students with disabilities, and they are requiring that they now publish in newspapers the ability to file complaints. This is exactly what happens as the result of voucher programs, and we're going to see it in Indiana. The fact of the matter is your listeners know what's going on. Almost 68% of the vouchers come from the top 20 districts. 216 districts in the state of Indiana only had 32% of the vouchers. So it's happening in a very select few. Justice Rucker made a great comment during the oral argument on this case. And he said, what happens when the voucher program becomes so large that it actually threatens our ability to provide a common school system? And that's the decision that was left for another day. But that is exactly what your listeners are sensing is going to happen. There will be cream skimming. They will end up with the parents and the students they want, and they will dump
the kids who present special challenges onto the public school system, and they will end up with exactly the kind of public school system they say they don't want.
Robert,
because it will be deemed underperforming based on test scores, which will reflect the challenges of the students left behind in the public school.
So, Mark, I appreciate that. And the question is about rules and regs, and I want to challenge you on one thing. I want to challenge you to keep going into these private schools and see the diversity. As a parent of a special needs child, I understand how the non-public and the Catholic schools have helped my child, and they do. They've taken them, and they've worked very well. Ron Colley, for example, down here, has a significant proportion of special needs kids. We know that. But when it comes to a level playing ground and all these rules and regulations, here's what I'd like to leave your listeners with. We've done a lot to put a lot of burden on our traditional school system, a lot to put a burden on our public schools, and it hasn't worked out that well for performance. I would and accountability. I'd much rather see outcome-based accountability for results on tests and a whole bunch of other metrics that we're not doing, as opposed to, hey, you have to follow this rule of having Chief Seattle's letter in your library, which is what the non-public schools have to do in the public schools, or you have to make sure that all teachers come from a specific type of licensing. The goal here is to actually have outcome-based regulations and not input. And when we talk about a level playing field, really that should be our level playing field. What happens to the kids after they've been educated, not what goes into the school before they get educated.
Well, and I'm going to agree with Bob on one point before we end, and that is on the diversity. I had no idea the number of black Catholics we had in Fort Wayne until I went and saw my alma mater, Bishop Luers, play football last year.
Well, and I guess what I would...
just tells me, by the way, sorry, John, that just tells me that the Catholic schools are taking non-Catholics and they're taking any kid who comes in. That's a great news.
Okay.
As long as they have a good 40 time.
Yeah, and I'm gonna toss, individualize this question for you because we've got about a minute apiece. Mark, what would it take, 15 seconds, for you to say that, that vouchers have been successful? And Robert, I'm going to turn it around for you. What evidence would there be? What would convince you that vouchers have failed?
My point is real simple. I don't believe that individuals should take tax dollars to spend them on a private good any more than I should be allowed a voucher to play golf at the Fort Wayne Country Club. I don't play at public courses, but it's my choice, and I pay for it.
Then I hope you'll never take Medicaid or Medicare or any other government funding that you're going to go to a private company for. But beyond that, here's what would convince me about vouchers being not good. I think when we get to a system where all schools are performing and our public schools are performing at a rate, however we define that, where parents have freedom of movement anywhere, I think the only thing that will convince me that vouchers don't work is if you see scores continually going lower and private schools not performing over time.
And that will have to be the last word. I would like to thank all three of my guests, Robert Enlow, Mark Giaquinta, and Karenia Chrysler, for what has been one of the liveliest conversations we have had on No Limits. We will be back next week. I will not be in this chair. My colleague, Leslie Stedman Weidenbender, will be substituting for me. Please be kind to her. Thank you for joining us here on No Limits.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.